Here, and I hope you've thought a little bit about Sunday school. I usually say about the morning service, but Sunday school, all right? I almost made that a great commitment to your pastor. That's what I thought about. But I thought that wouldn't work. It wouldn't get us anything. You guys are already very gracious to me and my wife, very gracious. You just don't understand. You guys, like, remember too many, you know, Pastor Appreciation Month, our birthdays, anniversary. You guys do, it's amazing. You just don't understand. I talked to my other preacher boys, you know, poor James, he was there for the 20th year, and they didn't even say, thank you for 20 years of celebration. You know, they didn't even say, he gets so frustrated with his folks that, and it's not that he needs to be applauded or anything, it's just, they have never recognized his birthday, ever. And so when he watches, and then you guys do something for me, he always calls me and says, you're sorry. You're a sorry pastor. And he's just joking with us. But great commitment to the great commandment. Now, does anybody know that verse? They can say it and pick out of the candy dish? Can you do it without looking on the screen? No, Ed. Okay. Okay. I know. I ask you, and that's what's going to happen. That's why I'm going to ask you more in private, and I'll have candy in front of you, and that'll help. I'm just telling you. Anybody know it? I know. Yeah. I didn't learn that in grade school. I didn't learn anything in grade school. I didn't. I didn't care. The only verse I ever memorized was Jesus wept. And I remember that one like crazy. John 11:35. Jesus wept. But I'm going to ask next week if anybody has that down. So you don't have to. But the great commitment to the great commandment. And you're going to see, as soon as Pastor Josh gets back, I miss that boy being here already, but Wednesday night he's going to have to blow those up, and we're going to put those around here. And then just to remind you, it's a great, great commitment to a great, probably the great commandments. Not a great commandment, the great. Keep that in mind. Put that through your mind this week. Larry's going to put it up there, not with that rest of it. He's going to redo it for me, and he's going to have it up there a lot over this year, and it's going to be a reminder to us. But Micah chapter 7, Bill was so right, and we are right there in chapter 7, because Bill's been going home to be with Mary, and I understand that he's, it's a chore and a challenge what he's doing, and you need to pray for Mary, but you need to pray for Bill as well. He's doing a wonderful job there, but we're talking about how God is unsurpassed. And that phrase that he used this morning, who is like unto God? Micah is the one who uses that, but who is like unto God? God is unsurpassed. And the first thing we looked at was judgment. That's the only thing we've looked at so far because it took me 2 weeks to get through it. But he looked at the judgment. God is unsurpassed. And it's there's a breakdown in society. There's a breakdown in leadership. There's a breakdown in the home. And last week we looked at that God is judging America right now. Some of you are waiting for God's judgment to come down on America. And it may come like that one day. But let me tell you something. God is already judging America. God is. Immorality, that's a judgment of God. Homosexuality, that's a judgment of God. Reprobate mind, did you see in the last 2 weeks all the shootings, all the killings? And the people who do it are just, there's absolutely no remorse in them. That's part of God's judgment. It's coming, and it's not going to get better because those are the judgments of God. Now, the results of those judgments are a lot of death. Our HIV and the different diseases that are transmitted. And all those come as a result, but the judgment of God is immorality, homosexuality, and reprobate mind. So God is unsurpassed in judgment. But there's a second thing, and you have to read Micah very carefully to find this, and you'll read this over and over again, because I read this passage like 8 times from verses 8 through 15. Because I couldn't get a handle on what Micah was saying. So I read it, And then I asked the Holy Spirit to show me, and I read it, and then I reread it. And then I opened three of my commentaries, and I read what they had to say about it. And all of a sudden, by putting it all together, I'm beginning to understand, I think, a little bit what Mike is saying. So I'm going to tell you what I think Mike is saying in 8 through 15, and it's there. It's there, but it's just hard to find out to the casual reader, because I know I didn't even read it casually. I read it to learn it, and it was very difficult. But as I went through, I think verses 8 through 15, Micah praises God for his great acts of deliverance. God is a delivering God. And the idea is this. Micah looks at this passage. He's looking to the past, but understand this, but he's looking forward rather than back. He's looking back to remind him of what's coming ahead, if that makes sense. That's what he's doing. He's reminding them of the past to show them what's going to happen in the future, because the greatest deliverance there's going to be, you know what that is? The second coming of Jesus Christ. And all of mankind is destroyed except those who followed Christ, and he sets up his earthly kingdom, the kingdom he's promised the Jews. And that's what the Jews are waiting for. That's what their promise is. That's what the was given to the Jews. That wasn't given to you and me. We're promised a home in heaven. The Jews were promised an earthly land. They will get it. That's the great deliverance. But all the past deliverances show who is like God is unsurpassed in his deliverance. Again, he tells us in the days when they came out of Egypt, you'll find that in there. And he showed the wonders, and that anticipated the future deliverance, what God was capable of doing. The prophet had been right about judgment to come. And he's not retracting that, because judgment's going to come. But the people will be carried off to Babylon at this point. He's telling the Jews, God has delivered you from Assyria in 701 when he killed 185,000 soldiers, but you're still going to come under the judgment of God. You're going to be deported to another deliverance, another nation that speaks another tongue, because you've rejected God. But one day, there's going to be a great deliverance. And so I began to write down, it's not all in this passage, but that's the idea behind the passage, that God is unsurpassed, verses 1 through 7, in his judgment. Nobody can do judgment like God does it. But God is unsurpassed in his great acts of deliverance. So you go back, and I went back in my mind. And it didn't take me long. You guys would have found these, so it's nothing new. But you go back to Egypt, and you see probably the greatest. That's something besides creation. That deliverance out of Egypt was probably the greatest act that the world even remembers today. The 10 plagues that God brought down upon Egypt. But you know, if you follow those plagues very carefully, you'll find out that those plagues came down upon Egypt. And by the way, all 10 of them, you know what they attacked? You know what they were in reference to? The Egyptian gods. And he was showing there's no God like the God. And what better way to do it than to bring up things against Egypt, that they worship gods, their gods. And I guarantee you, you see it in the movie of the Ten Commandments, but I guarantee you, some of the high priests and some of the religious people went to Pharaoh and said, Pharaoh, let the people go, because there's nobody like that God. That was the deliverance. And without lifting a finger to battle, God delivered. Now Moses, remember the story in Acts chapter 7? Some of you got to read that. That's because it's pretty interesting. But Moses wanted to become the deliverer. Before he went to the wilderness and God made him and called him and through the burning bush and brought him back to Egypt, God thought, honestly, he was going to deliver Israel. I believe that with my whole heart. Because in Acts chapter 7, you find out remember, that's the story about when Moses killed the two Egyptians. And when the Israelites turned on him, that conversation with him, he said, I thought you would see that I'm going to do that and you would follow me. See, Moses was trained in the way of the Egyptians. I think he was trained in battle. I think he was supposed to be one of the commanders, probably the commander of the greatest army of that day. I think Moses was being trained for that. I think he was hand-to-hand combat. So to go to war, to go to battle, to lead a nation against another nation, I think he was well-trained in that. And I think that's why in Acts chapter 7, Moses killed the two Egyptians to show the Israelites that he meant business. And he was capable of leading Israel out of Egypt. But yet we know that wasn't God's plan. God said, it's not about you, Moses. I'm just going to send you out in the wilderness, and I'm going to break you down and tear you down until you become so humble that it's no longer you. It's me. And that's why I do believe that Moses is the meekest man that ever walked on the face of this earth. He didn't start out that way, but that's what he became. Because God said, it's not about you. I've got a plan. I'm going to destroy their gods. I'm going to show them their gods mean nothing. And it's so interesting because as he brings down the 10 plagues upon Egypt, who didn't they fall upon? Read it. Israel. Can you imagine? Those plagues were as much to represent and show his power to Israel or to Egypt as it was to show it to Israel, because here's all these things happening to Egypt, and guess what? God put a little protection around Israel there in Goshen. What a deliverance. And that's even talked about. It's written about in history books. It's there even today. That great deliverance, there's no God who can deliver like God can deliver. And then they come out to the Red Sea and the greatest army, and nobody's armed. And again, as I just read in the book of Psalms, you need to read Psalm 105, 106, and 107. Because not one feeble person came out of it. I told you that before. It just amazes me. Not one feeble person came out of Egypt that was in Israel. They weren't feeble. There was nobody that needed help getting out of there. They all were in good health when they came out of there. You read Psalms if you disagree with me. But God brought them out and delivered them to the Red Sea, the wrong path. We've talked about that. But God had a plan. You think about it. You know when he stopped the Jordan River? That was quite amazing. But that was a river that flowed. And we've seen man do that. Man's dammed up a river before, have they not? And it stopped. So, I mean, the Jordan River was quite amazing how God did it. Don't get me wrong. But he stopped the river from flowing, and they went across on dry ground. That was a wonderful miracle. But think about the Red Sea. That wasn't a river. And it's up to 160 feet deep to the place where that man has figured out that where the crossing took place, and it's up to 160 feet deep. God stopped the waters both sides. You talk about a miracle. You talk about the power of God. Matter of fact, you'll find that Moses wrote a song about it. The great deliverance. That was probably the greatest miracle that ever took place in the Bible. I believe they're all great miracles. Don't get me wrong. But when he parted that Red Sea and he just stopped them and the ground dried up and Israel walked across on dry ground. And then when the Egyptian army tried, he caused them to go back over them, and they had wiped out the greatest army, the most powerful army of that day. Leaving Egypt defenseless and helpless. What a deliverance. That's what Mike is saying. He mentions Egypt. But I don't know if he went into total detail. But he said, look at what God delivered. Look at how they delivered Egypt. Look at how God has delivered you from Assyria, because that had happened. This is real life stuff. You know, Assyria had taken, in 722, they destroyed, wiped out Israel, the northern kingdom in Samaria. And they came the same to do, and 21 years later in 701 BC, they came to do that to Judah. And all the prophets talked about this. Micah talked about it, and he attacked all the little cities all around that. There were like Jerusalem was the mother city, all these little cities, and he destroyed and wiped out all these cities. Then he came to the mother, the final city, and he put his army entirely around Jerusalem. He didn't want to battle them. He just wanted them to surrender. So he sent that guy up, his general, and he said, you know, look at what the Assyrian God has done to all the people before. Nobody can stand up to the Assyrian gods. Nobody can beat their gods. And Isaiah came and met with Hezekiah, and they went into the temple and they prayed, and he put that letter before the Lord, and Israel repented, and there was that turning back to God, and Isaiah told Hezekiah, nothing's going to happen. You're going to be spared. And God sent an angel that night and killed 185,000 Assyrian soldiers. Then the commander of the Assyrian army, the king of the Assyria, went back home, and his son slew him. And it just shows you the deliverance. And that's what Mike is trying to say. There's God's unsurpassed in judgment, but God's unsurpassed in deliverance. Look what he did for, you know. So Assyria takes over Israel, and God wants, I think, Israel and Judah together. So Babylon takes over Assyria and then comes and takes over Judah. So both Israel and Judah are in captivity to Babylon. Isn't it amazing how God works? And this was the greatest city of the day. Now when we get to Nahum, you'll see that Nineveh might have been a greater city, but not in the seven wonders of the world, and not of the, you know, he had the first running water, and the first Babylon was far advanced in technology and different things. Now, you'll find out there was no city greater than Nineveh in its strength and its power. But God took and put Israel and Judah together for 70 years in the greatest possible place he could put them. And then God raised up a heathen king named Cyrus. As the Persians came in and took over, he could have done anything he chose to do, but God raised him up to send Ezra and Nehemiah to rebuild the temple and to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. And this heathen king who had nothing at stake, no reason to do what he did, he provided him with the funds. He provided him with the wood and the different things, everything they needed, even the protection that they needed to go down, and Nehemiah rebuilt the walls in 52 days. You see, God is unsurpassed in his deliverance. Egypt, Assyria, Cyrus. But in that same realm, the Persians still, they had conquered the world, basically. They were the great nation of the world, and that brings us to where they had really, most of Israel stayed in Persia at that time. Very, very few, 50,000 went down to help Nehemiah rebuild the walls. And when they did that, Satan raised up a man named Haman. You remember Haman? He was straight from the pit of hell. And his idea was to destroy the Jews. And he hated the Jews because God had placed who? Right there, Mordecai. God's plan is amazing. And he got so mad at Mordecai the Jew that Satan was going to use him to wipe out. And again, I'm telling you, this was Satan controlled, because I think Hitler was Satan controlled to wipe out the Jews. Because if you know, at that point, the Messiah's already come. But if he wipes out all the Jewish nation, and they no longer exist, then Jesus Christ couldn't be born a Jew. And so Haman, you know, devised a plan and set a day that you could go in, and if you killed somebody from Israelites, you could take everything they own. You could have it. And his plan was devised and set over the whole kingdom. It took like 21 days to take that message throughout the whole kingdom. On such and such a day, Israel was going to be wiped out. But you know what? God raised up a beautiful young lady, not an army, a beautiful young lady called Esther for such a time as this. Don't tell me it was Esther's charm. Don't tell me it was anything Esther did. But under Mordecai's direction, under God, and under God's hand of deliverance, she went in and portrayed exactly what Haman was. And Israel was spared completely. Matter of fact, if you read that account closely, not one Israelite lost their lives in that wicked day. And yet, hundreds of Persians lost their lives. That's the hand of God, folks. That's the deliverance of God. You know, I went back, and I didn't have time, because my time just fleets by here. But remember the Maccabees? Antiochus, the Epiphanes, he was a forerunner of Christ, and he's the one who, or a forerunner of the Antichrist, I'm sorry. Big difference there. He was a wicked, wicked king. And if you follow him, he was wicked. He wanted to destroy the Jews. He's the one who took the pig in and cut it open and sacrificed the pig in the temple of God. And remember the Judas Maccabee, the Maccabees were there, and God raised up the Maccabees, and they came up and took on. And they had no business. You read the story, folks. You gather the information. They should have been annihilated and wiped out. But God raised up the Maccabees to raise up Jewish people. And they defeated this wicked king. Only by the hand of God. You've read stories about the Six-Day War. There's probably more stories than I could tell you that Israel had no business winning. But they won. You know what's happening over there in Israel right now? Now maybe it's part of God's judgment upon them. But let me tell you something, Israel isn't going away, folks. I don't know if it's going to be a miraculous. I don't know what's going to happen. But I'm telling you, if we were smart, we would get on Israel's team right now. Because they're not going away. Because what Micah is trying to say in verses 8 through 15, God is unsurpassed in his deliverance. You look at Egypt, the Red Sea, and Assyria, and Cyrus, and Esther, and the Maccabees, and defeating the Antiochus, the type of the Antichrist, all the wars that Israel fought. But those all point to one thing. The greatest deliverance of all. That's the second coming of Jesus Christ. You know, to you and me, it doesn't sound like much, but when Jesus comes back at the rapture and takes all the Christians out, there's going to be a moment in time right there where there's not one Christian on this earth. You think about it. Because at the rapture, you can play all the games you want. People can. I'm not pointing fingers at you. People can play all the games they want, but when the rapture comes, you either go to heaven because you're saved or you're left behind because you're not saved. Doesn't matter church attendance. It doesn't matter how you look. It doesn't matter how you live. It doesn't matter what committee you're a part of. It doesn't matter at that point. Only God knows and at that point, every person, every born-again believer will be taken out, and for a short period of time, there will not be one Christian on this earth. I believe at that time the Holy Spirit's taken out to work as he works. I think he'll still work like he did in the Old Testament. Now, obviously, we know he works because we see the miracles and the working through the two witnesses that come down, the 144,000 that are sealed, that go forth preaching the gospel. But it becomes a wicked time, folks. And the Antichrist does his best to rule the world. There'll be more Jews killed during that time Antichrist is going to make Hitler seem awful small. The Antichrist at that point is going to make Antiochus Epiphanes feel awful little. The Pharaoh who ordered the killing of all the baby boys of Egypt, and they were cast out into the sea to be eaten by the crocodiles or alligators, whatever there was, or both, or to drown. It's going to seem awful small compared to what takes place and how many Jews are massacred, I believe beheaded and killed simply because they won't take the mark of the beast, the mark of the Antichrist. For 7 years, you don't even understand what wickedness is. You don't even understand what an alcoholic is, what alcohol problems are, what drug problems are. I think, according to the language that I've read, that's the only way many people are going to have to cope is through drugs and alcohol. It's going to become the most decimating, wicked in 7 years that this world has ever seen. But what Mike is trying to say is, it's going to get bad. A lot of Jews are going to lose their life. But God is unsurpassed in his deliverance, because at the end of those 7 years, the sky is going to open. The clouds are going to give way. And out of the heaven comes the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords with an army of his angels. And maybe you and me with him. And he comes back, and by the word of his mouth, the destruction of those angels, every single unsaved person is destroyed. And for a fleeting moment, for a moment, there'll be nobody but saved people on this earth. And God's going to deliver them and rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. It's called Zion. The river's going to flow through Zion. And it's going to water, and there's going to be back to the Garden of Eden type weather, I believe, and atmosphere. It's going to be the greatest and finest atmosphere this world has ever seen. See, that's what Mike is saying. He's looking at the past to show Israel that God is unsurpassed in his deliverance. But it's all looking that one day, no matter how bleak things get, no matter how awful things get, one day God will once again deliver Israel. That's why Mike is just an amazing book. It talks more about Jesus Christ than any other. It puts almost Christ on a pedestal where he deserves to be. That's what I love about Micah. He understood. He understood he would come and be born in Bethlehem as a baby. He probably talked more about Christ in his Old Testament of the minor prophets than anybody else did, because he knew that Christ was the difference maker. And so next week I'll show you how God is unsurpassed in his hand of mercy and his guidance. And then the last part, and I think I can get them all in 1 week. The last one is God is unsurpassed in his forgiveness. That's probably the greatest attribute Micah thinks God has, is he forgives. And so you say, what do we take from this? Well, this prophecy isn't for you. We're going out before the great deliverance ever come, but you know, do we get in a hard spot, between a rock and a hard place, we call it? God is a God of deliverance. God is unsurpassed in deliverance. I know you weren't there, and I know it wasn't designed for you, but Egypt, Assyria, Cyrus, Esther, Maccabees, Six-Day War, all the other wars in between that I didn't have time to write down. God is unsurpassed in his deliverance. God is able. Now, he may choose not to, but don't lose sight of the fact that God is able. That's what Micah's saying. Now, Micah knew the great deliverance was coming one day for the Jews. He had that vision. He had that knowledge. God had given him that. And so he said, you're just going to have to trust me based upon God's deliverance in the past. He's unsurpassed. He'll deliver in the future. God is unsurpassed in his judgments. God is unsurpassed in his deliverance. It's a great book. Now, you read Matthew, Micah chapter 7 on your own, it'd be like me. Okay, I get a little bit of it. And the part Bill read this morning, there's no God who's like unto thee. I get that. Micah just takes it to the next step. There is no God like our God, because God is the only God. If you don't believe it, look at his judgments. Look at his deliverance. Look at his hand of mercy and his guidance. And look at his forgiveness. Listen, you talk to Muslims. You talk to Hindus. You think they portray God as a God of forgiveness? That's why there's so much hatred. That's why there's so much murder. That's why there's so much killing. You talk to a real person who's involved in that. God is a God unsurpassed in forgiveness, in guidance, in deliverance, and in judgment. What a way to end a book. Let's pray. Father, thank you for folks who are willing to come and stay here all day. I know they're tired. Some of them would rather be having a nap because they need that. But God, they've chosen to stay, that they could just grasp maybe a little truth. And I love the Old Testament because the Old Testament is the key to the New Testament. And we can understand God's greatness and God's power by a lot of things that happened in the Old Testament. We know who is like unto our God. There's no other God. There's no other buddy that's even a God. God is the only God. He's unsurpassed in his judgment. He's unsurpassed in his deliverance. He's unsurpassed in his hand of mercy and guidance. He's unsurpassed in his forgiveness. There's no God like our God. Lord, I know this principle isn't for us, or this book isn't for us, but the truths are. Take them in our hearts. Help us to place God above all their gods. Oh, for us in America today, sometimes it's money. It's material things. It's sports. It's people. It's stars. They become our gods. But there's no God like thee, O Lord. You're unsurpassed in so many ways. Thank you for the book of Micah. Apply it to our hearts and lives. And as we close, as we do always, every service,